Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And good morning. Welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined in studio by Walker Wildman, AFA Vice President of Operations. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here.
And also joined in studio by Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning, Fred.
The news never stops.
I should say Fredo. That will become a little more, people understand that comment in just a few minutes when we talk about a new candidacy for the presidency. So, Fredo.
Yeah, Frederico or
Edo, you know,
whatever we feel like.
Whatever you're feeling this day.
Whatever we're feeling. That'll make a little more sense, folks, in just a few minutes. I also want to welcome to this morning's program, today's program, a man who is stronger than Thor, smarter than Tony Stark, and better looking than Captain America. That is Ray Pritchard, founder of Keep Believing Ministries, joining us from Kansas City.
Good morning,
Eduardo.
How are you doing there?
Hey, listen, I had to say that because the new trailer for Avengers Endgame came out today or last night. I don't remember. So I watched it and thought I'm going to use an Avengers-themed description for Ray today. So I don't really think you're more handsome than Captain America, but I said it.
It's so, a nice thought.
It is a nice thought. So, hey, folks, before we get into the news for the day, I want to let you know that we are gathering stories right now as we speak to play during our April Share-a-thon. We'd like to hear from you, perhaps American Family Radio. We hope it has made a difference in your life. Maybe we've been there at a time that you needed to hear some inspiration, some encouragement, maybe given the right thought at just the right time. So we'd like to hear your AFR story. It could be a blessing and an encouragement to other listeners. That's why you would be calling and share your kind of listener testimonies, is what we call it, for those who are AFR fans. So call and share for just a minute or two. You might hear yourself during Share-a-thon. How do you do that? Let me just tell you. You call the number I'm about to give you, so grab a pencil and a piece of paper. Don't do it while you're driving, please. Our listener story line is 877-876-8893. I'll repeat that number in a second. That is the number to call. You'll get the prompts you need to record your listener testimony, 877-876-8893. And you may hear yourself and your testimony during our April Share-a-thon and maybe even in the lead-up to it. So that is a number to call. We'll probably give that again later on in the program. You're going to hear other programs doing that for the next several weeks on American Family Radio. We hope if AFR has made a difference, you will call and let us know. All right, Fred, what have we got? What in the world is happening in the world today?
The American electorate can breathe a little easier this morning, all right?
Okay, good.
Because Beto O'Rourke, who the AP describes as Spanish-speaking 46-year-old former punk rocker, former three-term congressman, who almost beat Ted Cruz in the 2018 election there in Texas, Senate election in Texas, raised an incredible amount of money, $80 million, I think it was one figure that I saw
for challenge
that Senate race out there. Was just, 200,000 votes short, I think, of Ted Cruz.
Very close.
For a Texas, a Democrat in Texas to come that close to a standing Republican senator, it was considered very close out there. Anyway, this morning, sitting on a couch beside his wife, he made the announcement. It was either late last night or early this morning. So this is how it sounded in his announcement. Beto O'Rourke.
Amy and I are happy to share with you that I'm running to serve you as the next president of the United States of America. There's a lot more to come, but I want to leave you with this. The only way for us to live up to the promise of America is to give it our all and to give it for all of us. We are truly now, more than ever, the last great hope of Earth. At this moment of maximum peril and maximum potential, let's show ourselves and those who will succeed us in this great country just who we are and what we can do. Thank you.
All right, so that was a bit of the announcement.
It was about a 3.5 minute video.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
was just a piece of it.
Yeah. Apparently he's up in Iowa already today. He went to a coffee shop, which is all politicians go to coffee shops.
Right.
When they visit a state. He said, I could care less about your party persuasion, your religion, anything other than the fact that right now we are all Americans. His thrust in the announcement is he regards himself as bipartisan. He believes that he can attract people across the political spectrum. And I'm sure people are really going to be wowed with the YouTube video that he made back a short time ago. He went to a dentist office, and somebody taped his visit to the dentist office. And so we saw him with a mouthful of instruments.
Yeah.
He really thought that was important. Oprah has interviewed him. All joking aside here, folks, I just want to go through. This was the New York Times this morning. They put out where he stands on the issues. He's totally open border.
Yes,
he'd like to tear down the wall.
And he said that.
Yeah, right. He'd like to tear down the wall. So I'm sure he'll get a lot of bipartisan support for that. He's really big on increasing gun control across the country.
Right.
Attention, Second Amendment people. Health care, you bet. Universal health care for all. He has a version of that. Criminal justice, yeah, pretty light on that. And trade and agriculture, totally against what the president's been doing in trade policies, tariffs, and that kind of thing. And on and on and on. So there you have it. That's a little bit of Beto O'Rourke. Now, this morning, former Speaker Newt Gingrich was asked about Beto because I believe the mainstream media is going to get behind him. I think he's going to be trying to sell himself. He says he's doing already as a moderate, even though where he stands would be hardly moderate and most conservatives.
He's just as far left as Ocasio-Cortez.
Oh, absolutely. Right. On abortion, it's okay.
The environment.
Exactly. So anyway, Newt Gingrich this morning, this is what he says about Beto O'Rourke.
I think it's a free country and everybody should follow their destiny, and his destiny is to keep losing. Look, I think Beto O'Rourke is one of the great examples of the left talking itself into hysteria. This guy gets, what, $80 million,
mm-hmm.
runs against Ted Cruz, and loses. At which point the left goes, boy, that was a great race. It was very exciting, he got close, but I just want to make the point. And he loses. Now, he can't carry his home state, and he wouldn't carry his home state against Trump.
All right, so there you have it, according to Newt Gingrich, that he doesn't feel he's going to do well nationally. So my prediction is, though, the mainstream media is going to love this guy. They really are. Probably because some of the others who have declared for the Democrats already, like Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and some of the others, are seen as too far left. I mean, they're right in there with AOC and her Green New Deal and all of that kind of thing. But I think O'Rourke is going to be able to, or attempt to, with the help of the mainstream media, trick the American people into believing he's some kind of moderate, which he is not. Now, here's one more thing. We did stories on the campaign, the Senate election campaign. One of the stories, and you guys are going to remember this, was done by the New York Times about evangelical women in Texas supporting him. You remember that story?
I do remember that, mm-hmm. now that you mention it.
Yes, they were from the Village Church, which is a very large, and Ray would be aware of this, having come right. from Dallas, very large evangelical church, high-profile pastor there in the Dallas area. And they profile these women as evangelicals for O'Rourke. Now, I don't know whether that's going to translate into a support for presidential, but they were speaking openly about supporting him against Ted Cruz. So there's a lot of interesting elements tied up with this guy.
You know, Ray, this we are rushing headlong into some sort of major, potentially catastrophic confrontation in this country between the Beto O'Rourkes and all of those on the far left and traditionalists and conservatives. This is really extraordinary. I had forgotten until Fred mentioned it about those women, and this seemed like there was some follow up, and probably One News Now doing it.
Mm-hmm.
These women were our social gospel people,
yes. mm-hmm.
right? They were being portrayed as regular evangelicals. Are candidacies, in your opinion, Ray, like Beto O'Rourke, are they going to split evangelicalism as well as the rest of the country?
I got to say, I think his play to the middle. Now, Fred is 100% correct. He's not any sort of moderate.
No.
He's way over on the left. But I think it's a clever idea, at least in this early stage, to distinguish himself from, well, AOC and her crowd and Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris and Gillibrand and the others, and Elizabeth Warren, who clearly are moving left as fast as they can, to at least make a play for the middle to say, look at me. You know, Vanity Fair did a puff piece. I mean, it's really all you can call it, but it's well-written puff piece on Beto O'Rourke. I think it came out yesterday, and I was reading a good part of it. And they did their part, lifted the water, so to speak. They were carrying the water for Beto to show that he's just like us. He's one of us. He's young, and he's charismatic, and he's friendly, and he's family-centered. To your question, Ed, is it possible that a guy like that could make inroads into the evangelical movement? Yeah. On the squishy left side of the spectrum, there are votes there to be picked up by somebody like Beto O'Rourke, who at least looks good and says some things that sound more reasonable than he really is, because he's on the left. He is no moderate at all. But, yeah, could he pick up some evangelical votes? Unfortunately, the answer is yes.
Hey, now, Walker, I mean, I agree with what Ray's saying. When we say this guy is on the left, he is warning that large parts of the world will soon be uninhabitable. He agrees with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her new Green Deal, that we have 12 years to save the planet. You kind of heard that messianic type of hype when he's talking about the fact that the United States is the last great hope for Earth. You know, Earth, not just humanity, Earth. He's pushing this. So this guy really is far left, but to Ray's point, if he portrays himself as being in the middle and gets a lot of mainstream media support in that contention, whether or not he remains in the public perception as a moderate, it could push him in front of the rest of the field.
Yeah, it probably could. And, you know, the thing is, the Texas, I've read some headlines where people are talking about Texas is now like a battleground state. And, you know, I don't think it's like an Ohio or Pennsylvania in the sense that it's can be lost by a couple thousand votes. But as Fred mentioned at the beginning of the show, Robert O'Rourke lost Texas by 2 to 3%, a couple hundred thousand votes. And in a state the size of Texas, 200,000 votes is not really that many. So Texas, the left is putting all of its bet and money into Texas. Not that they're going to flip it in a year or two, that they're going to flip it in 10 or 20 years.
Yeah.
And we all know if they flip Texas, then
well, the Republican Party
the Republican
is
Party
done
is over from a presidential
of, yes,
level.
Right.
Unless a miracle happens and they pick up California or something like that, which we know that's probably not going to happen. But the way that the left knows they can possibly get Texas is if they use someone from Texas, which is why Robert O'Rourke is loved by the media.
Yeah.
And you're using the term Robert because that is his real name.
Yeah, and some suspect, hasn't been proven yet, but he uses Beto to try to appeal to the Latino community.
Oh, yeah.
As if he's Latino.
Sure. As if he's Latino. Sure.
That's the Latino
he's Irish.
Way of pronouncing Roberto.
Exactly.
The nickname is Beto.
Exactly. So some say he's using Beto to try to appeal to the Latino community, even though he's not Hispanic. So anyways, I use Robert to try to counter that theory.
I think there was one comment on this morning that he's Kennedy-esque. You know, in appearance and that kind of thing. You know, it was just for a moment on that. But watch out, folks.
Well, he is young.
And
yeah, it's a handsome couple. I watched the video. He and his wife, she's lovely. He's handsome. Yeah, this is the second time on the show I've called another guy handsome. I already called Ray handsome.
You're securing your manhood.
I'm securing my manhood. So I get that kind of Kennedy-esque appeal. You know, they're appealing to the – because he's 46 years old. I don't remember how old JFK was, but he was young like that. And so they're pushing that as a kind of a narrative for
him. Yeah, and you know, the back to the whole evangelical point about whether some would might vote for him, and they did, you know, did a lengthy story. What was the outlet that did that story in Texas?
Well, New York Times.
Yeah, the New York Times did that story with two or three women who said they were voting for Robert O'Rourke. The thing is, the litmus test, the key question on the litmus test is, where does he stand on abortion? Mm-hmm. And we all know that he's for abortion.
Yeah, right.
He's for continuing the killing of unborn children. So to me, any Christian who's trying to figure out who to vote for anywhere should look at that issue first before you start looking at other issues.
But as Ray mentioned, you mentioned the squishy evangelical left, because I think of these women that were interviewed, if I remember, we're going back a few months, so my memory may fail me here, but they were talking about immigration. That is the issue for the quote-unquote squishy evangelical left.
Yeah.
And they basically say, well, if we're going to be pro-life, we need to also be concerned about the lives of those trying to come to this country.
Exactly.
And that's how they work their way around the abortion thing.
Yeah. Going to be interesting.
Well, we're living in such an image-driven society, too. I mean, you called him handsome, but he is, right?
Yep.
I mean, he presents himself well. I don't, you know, to use a famous saying, I don't know that there's much there. I think that I don't know how deep his understanding of politics really is. Maybe that'll get exposed in the the debates that are coming up a few months down the road. But, you know, this is an interesting period, isn't it? We're in the spring, and the debates don't start for a few months yet. So this is a time when the media can grab somebody like Beto O'Rourke and make him into a hero, and Vanity Fair can give that big article yesterday. And, you know, he's on the front page of the Drudge Report this morning. So he picked a good time, in my judgment, to announce himself, because he does look – look at him and look at Bernie Sanders. You can tell we're talking about different generations here.
Yeah, and I would say this, too. Everything's okay now, but he's going to be running against at least 11 other candidates. Probably more will announce from the Democratic side. And so whatever, if he has any skeletons, they'll be revealed. Mm-hmm. If he has any weaknesses, he'll be hammered by his opponents, who also want to be at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue come the next election. So.
This next story I'm going to give you kind of links our Beto O'Rourke story with the story that will follow shortly. I'll explain. This was a story that came out yesterday. Authorities in Northern California are criticizing sanctuary policies they say prevented federal authorities from detaining a gang member in the country illegally before he allegedly killed a woman inside her home. And San Jose Police Chief Eddie Garcia says Carlos Eduardo Arevalo Carranza stalked Bambi Larson's neighborhood before allegedly beating and stabbing her to death. This guy, ICE, the immigration people, wanted to pick him up 9 times, but he hid himself in sanctuary cities and like Santa Clara County and Los Angeles County. They are sanctuary areas. In other words, those municipalities refused to hand this guy over. He's a gang member. He's in the country illegally. They refused to hand him over 9 times to immigration officials. And now he's charged with stalking and murdering this woman. Now, so what do you say about that, Beto O'Rourke?
Right.
With your open borders policy and other Democrat candidates who want to get rid of ICE altogether. I hope the family of this dear woman sues the pants off of these municipalities, these cities that have declared themselves sanctuary cities. Dana Lash was on this morning. She's a columnist and is on as a spokesman. I think she works with the NRAs. And she was on Fox and Friends this morning. You're going to hear a few dings in the middle of this audio, and that's just a computer thing in the background. But here's what she had to say about sanctuary cities and this latest murder involving this illegal immigrant. Cut number eight.
The police chief, Eddie Garcia, had said nine times ICE had that a detainer had been applied for by ICE. It was ignored by the county. And on the 10th time, of course, now after he murders this poor woman, Bambi Larson, then on the 10th time, finally, county officials decide, well, I guess we should work with ICE. Yeah. We have a guy who's been deported repeatedly. He's been convicted. He was last convicted. Well, he actually had a couple of other criminal convictions just in recent months. But in 2016, battery on an officer. In 2015, methamphetamine, all kinds of drugs. I mean, his rap sheet is so long. Why are Sanctuary City advocates making excuses for thugs like these?
So there you have it. She summarizes it. This guy's been in trouble from the get-go, yet these sanctuary cities have been protecting him from being deported. You talk about messed up priorities.
Hmm. Well, and the fact is that the president is trying to make the case that we do have an actual national emergency here
on the border. Yes.
And but here's the problem is that those on the left, those who want open borders, they are never going to admit there is an emergency or a problem with that southern border. To them, these are exceptions, so much so that the vast majority of those coming illegally across the border are just sweet, innocent people seeking a better life, and probably the majority are. But the numbers that are gang members and drug dealers and human traffickers and just out-and-out criminals is high enough that I think it is a national emergency, but you're not going to get any cooperation from mainstream Republicans or those on the left until some tragedy occurs where you have a massacre at a mall or something like that, and the American people snap out of it. Walker, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what else it would take, because we have the Kate Steinleys. We have this.
I know.
This poor woman in San Jose. What was her name? Bambi. What was her? Her Bambi Larson.
Mm-hmm.
This guy convicted of burglary, drug paraphernalia, battery of an officer, resisting arrest, entering and occupying a property.
Yeah.
This guy was a thug. Mm-hmm. If he committed this murder, what else do you need? But these people aren't convinced.
You know, and I would almost go as far to say that Democrats are so cold, they're so calloused on this issue, so out of touch with this issue, that a huge tragedy beyond what the tragedies that are happening every day could happen, and they would probably come up with some excuse, just like they do with terrorist attacks. Right. Islamic terrorist attacks, they make excuses about that. And, you know, the states, I'm glad some states like Texas and others are cracking down on these, quote, sanctuary cities. But a police chief or a sheriff not cooperating with ICE and letting these criminals back on the streets, that's almost grounds for the governor removing that sheriff or police chief, because that's totally putting your citizens in harm's way.
But, Fred, these states are in favor of these policies, too.
Oh, absolutely.
The lunacy goes all the way to the top.
It goes all the way to the top. And speaking of go to the top, let's go to Washington, where today your Senate is probably going to vote in favor of quashing the president's effort, the emergency declaration, to do something about the border. It's hard to believe, but you can't find even enough Republicans to support the president on this emergency declaration. And Vice President Mike Pence was out yesterday trying to convince people how badly this is needed. Cut number five.
President Trump declared a national emergency at our southern border. Despite the fact that the president has the clear statutory authority under the National Emergency Act, as I stand before you today, some in Congress are actually poised to try and stop the president from exercising the authority that Congress actually gave him to address this crisis. A vote against the president's emergency declaration is a vote against border security. Mm-hmm. A vote against the president's emergency declaration is a vote to deny the humanitarian and security crisis at our southern border. So today, before all of you brave Americans, we call on every member of the United States Senate, stand up for border security, stand with President Trump, and put the safety and security of America first.
All right, folks, the war to destroy Christian America. When we come back, David Horowitz will be joining us. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We'll pick up on some of these issues when we return. Please join us. We'll have more right after the break.
Trivia Friday.
Star Trek question. What powers the impulse drive?
Dilithium crystals?
My second cousin twice removed was on dilithium crystals. And every time when everybody's sitting around trying to have some peace and quiet, his arm would fly up in the air. You didn't know if he was trying to salute you or get somebody's attention.
Trivia Friday, 10 a.m. Central.
And two different times when he tried to say something, the garage door went up and down.
On American Family Radio.
Random.
In a move most Christians probably never expected to see, Walmart has created and is promoting a Facebook video ad that normalizes homosexual relationships. And they need to hear from you. The ad is part of a campaign released on Valentine's Day called Love is in the Aisle, a dating show at Walmart. Episode 2 features Pat and Andy, two homosexual men on a blind date as they meet at the store and shop together and discover whether or not they're compatible. Please sign the American Family Association petition to Walmart asking them to remove this pro-homosexual video and remain neutral on controversial issues. It's clear that Walmart is on the path to elevating homosexual relationships to the same level as the male-female model of marriage. Sam Walton must be turning over in his grave. Let Walmart hear from their Christian customers. We'll present the petition at corporate headquarters March 20th. Please sign our Walmart petition today at afa.net. That's afa.net.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. Bill Maher has a problem with Middle America. That story next. Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu. Bill Maher, the host of HBO's Real Time, says deep down, people who live in red states secretly want to live in cosmopolitan blue states.
There are two Americas, and it seems like one is where all the cool jobs are, where people drive Teslas and eat artisanal ice cream. We have orchestras and theater districts and world-class shopping. We have Chef Wolfgang Puck. They have Chef Boyardee.
Bill Maher seems to believe those of us who live in red states are a bunch of toothless rednecks who wear overalls and drink moonshine. But in reality, we're a pretty sophisticated bunch, smart enough to live in states without an income tax. And for what it's worth, the blue state can keep Wolfgang Puck because we've got Paula Deen. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
And welcome back to today's issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined by Walker Wildman, Fred Jackson, and Ray Pritchard. We are planning on having David Horowitz on, founder of the Horowitz Freedom Center, to talk about his new book, Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. We're having a little bit of a technical issue. If we can get that resolved, we will go to David Horowitz. If not, we will have him on another day coming up here. Let's kind of tie up the loose ends there. We got close to the break, and so we kind of faded out on Mike Pence's comments. We were talking about President Trump's declaration of a national emergency on the southern border, his desire to use funds that are available to him because of a law that Congress passed, I think way back in 1974, to build, to add to the wall on the southern border. Walker, a lot of conservatives are concerned about the idea of the president using national emergency declarations to advance policy and to spend money, as good conservatives should.
Right.
But you said something during the break I think we should mention, and it has to do with the actual language of the law, because Republicans in the Senate may kind of defeat the president on the national emergency unless he vetoes it. But what's the problem with the law?
Yeah, the thing here is that Congress, it actually passed in 1976. It was brought up for discussion and vote a year or two earlier, But what happened here is this National Emergency Act is actually very vague. It doesn't specify what a national emergency is or what qualifies for a national emergency. It leaves that into the hands of the president to determine. And so Congress created this authority that President Trump is using, and according to the law, whether you like it or not, he's following the law. And so, you know, I don't know where some of these Republican senators, what they're standing on, what facts. But another point here is that if we think that Democrats will not use the executive branch for overreach, that if somehow Trump withholds this and doesn't do it, that somehow Democrats will return the favor and they won't overstep their authority, who are we kidding? Because
right.
President Trump, with this whole illegal immigration debate, he signed this DACA executive order basically giving temporary amnesty to certain classes of illegal immigrants. And so the exceeding executive power has already been done by Democrats in years past. But this specific case is not an overreach of the executive privilege. And so if Congress doesn't like it, then they need to change the Act of 76.
Right. So let me just kind of tie this up before we go to our guest. And for Republican senators who are saying, we're nervous about the president using this power, you know, to build the wall, that to me is a non-starter, because the problem lies with the law. If you're really concerned with what the president's doing, you change the law. Their argument is that Democrats will use it now that Trump has used it. Well, they've already got the open-ended permission of Congress from 1976.
That's right.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to our guest, David Horowitz. He's founder of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. If you're familiar with online publications like Front Page Magazine and the blog Jihad Watch, you are familiar with David Horowitz. He is a hero of the conservative movement, very courageous man, and has a long history of coming out of leftist radicalism and seeing the world from a conservative perspective. And we have invited him on to talk about his new book. The book's title is Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. David, welcome to today's issues.
Thanks for having me.
Well, David, this book talks about an issue that maybe a lot of Americans are a little confused about, and that is cultural Marxism. And boy, why the left has gone so completely crazy for cultural Marxism. Can you kind of, you have this kind of a background yourself. Can you explain to our listeners what cultural Marxism is?
Yeah, it's very easy. The Marxist model is that the world is divided into oppressors and oppressed. And oppressors own the means of production. They own capital. It's a simple model. But he predicted that the working class would revolt because it had no rights, they were wage slaves. And that didn't happen. So sometime in the early 70s, the left decided that they would transfer this oppression model, that they would transfer it to races, classes, races, genders, and sexual orientation. So they divided the world into basically white people, white males who are straight, who are the oppressors of everybody else. It's a horrific model. It makes certainly, you know, white straight males guilty, or anybody who's white guilty before the facts, and anybody who's of color innocent, even if the facts show they're guilty. I think, you know, there's now some pushback in this country, which is very good, but not enough of it yet. The Democratic Party is a racist party. It believes in individual accountability is thrown out the window, and you're judged first by your skin color and then by your gender and sexual orientation. And they're also, the Democratic Party is ruled by hypocrisy, because they control every inner city in America of any size, all the killing fields, all the schools that don't teach poor black kids how to read and write and get a shot at the American dream. Every atrocity in the inner city, every injustice, 100% responsibility of the Democratic Party. But Republicans are too polite to ever mention it.
David, in your book, you've got a chapter about prayer in the schools, which we used to hear a lot about. The culture war now rages on so many fronts. Maybe we don't hear as much as we used to.
Well, they've won so many battles, the anti-American left. The first thing that my book establishes is that all of the values and principles that we as Americans hold dear, equality, inclusion, diversity, pluralism, all of them are Christian ideas to begin with, Christian values. Our country was settled and created by 98% Protestant Christians and could only have been created by Protestant Christians. But thanks to the Supreme Court fraudulent decisions beginning in 1962, after all, for 170 years until that decision to drive prayer out of the schools, to ban it in the schools. There had been prayer in the schools. So you talk about the power of precedent, or what they call stare decisis, and you see how outrageous that Supreme Court decision was. And Justice Potter Stewart, who was the only dissenter on the court, pointed out that the Supreme Court opens its sessions with an invocation, "God save our country and this honorable court." So, and of course, it moved on from that to Roe v. Wade, which another atrocity committed on the Constitution. The Planned Parenthood lawyers who brought the case invented a right to privacy in the Constitution, which doesn't exist. The Constitution doesn't refer to men or women or birth or anything like that. And there is no right to privacy in the Constitution. But they invented this right and made abortion legal through 9 months in every community in the country without consulting the citizens of that community. They circumvented the whole democratic process. And let's remember who the Supreme Court is. It's nine lawyers appointed for life by politicians. It's a travesty. What it's done is it's divided our country. I describe all this in Dark Agenda. It created the religious right, and the religious right elected Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump. And the reason we have such a deep division in the country today is because the Democratic Party has embraced a politics that's totalitarian and Marxist and opposed to everything that's fundamentally American.
David, this is Walker here. You know, with Christians and many who think conservatively, we get our worldview, if you will, our form of how we think government should work, mostly from Scripture, mostly from the Bible, as far as individual responsibility, liberty, dignity for all, things like that. But with the left, where on earth do they get their guiding principles from? What drives them, gets them out of bed every morning?
As you know, my background, I was brought up by communists, so I understand the left very well. And this book I've written, Dark Agenda, explains how the left is a counter-religion. It's a crypto-religion. It's a false religion, but it's a religion nonetheless. Uh-huh. And its values, I also trace it to a Christian heresy. It's called the Pelagian heresy. Pelagius was a monk who lived in the 4th century. And Pelagius believed that that sin is contrary to human nature. And therefore, if you are just true to your nature as a human being and a good Christian, that human beings could bring about the kingdom of heaven on earth without a divine intervention. St. Augustine, who was the kind of godfather of modern conservatism, he preached the opposite, that sin is integral to human nature. And you know that from the Garden of Eden. That's what that story is about. Adam and Eve had were in a paradise that was much better than socialism or communism, even in the fantasies of leftists, because you didn't die, there was no pain in childbirth, and so forth. But it required human beings not to want to know evil. But, of course, Adam and Eve were seduced by the serpent, who said, "You shall be as gods," which is like create a new world. And therefore, they were expelled from the Garden of Eden. The Pelagian nature of progressives believe that human beings are born good. Christians understand that human beings are born with the capacity for good and evil, and that the threat we face in every generation is ourselves. That's why we have morality. That's why we have to have laws. Once you don't have that idea, you get what the Democrats are doing now, which is to legalize the murder of babies that have been born. I never thought I'd live to see this day, but that's what happens when you don't have moral restraints. When you say stupid things like walls are immorality.
Right.
The Democrats have no moral principles to guide them, but they are driven by this fantasy that they can create a world which is like heaven without God. Yeah. They have no humility. I mean, their arrogance is it's on display all the time. And they're incredibly ignorant of the founding, and well, they should be, since we're not allowed to teach kids in public schools even that the pilgrims were Christians, or that they were fleeing religious persecution, or that they can teach the first Thanksgiving, but they can't say in school that they were giving thanks to God. And we've let this happen over so many years. That's the problem. The American patriots are slow in responding. We are actually too generous, too tolerant, too forgiving. The forces that are now, surging in the Democratic Party are evil. They support our enemies. That Cortez and her Communist Party crowd, Tlaib, well, there's a lot of them. They support our enemies. They support the terrorists. When they support the Palestinians, Palestine is ruled by two terrorist organizations that are aligned with Iran, death to America, and now they're in Congress. And again, Republicans are too polite to say this.
Our guest has been David Horowitz, who's founder of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He's author of the book, Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. Fascinating book. David, let our listeners know what your website is and where they can pick up a copy of Dark Agenda.
Okay, that's the most important thing. Dark Agenda is available on Amazon, and it should be on any book site.
Okay.
My center, Freedom Center, you can learn about it. We have a daily magazine, frontpagemagazine.com or frontpagemag.com for short.
David, hey, thank you so much. Thank you for this book, and thank you for all you do to defend the principles of our republic and what you do on a daily basis. I know you take a terrible amount of abuse over it, but
well, so does everybody who stands up, and that's the key, people. You got to be willing to stand up and take some of the heat. Mm-hmm. And the more of us that do, the less bite their attacks have. Already they've who believes them when they call people racist anymore?
Right. Thank you, David. Appreciate you being on the show with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Again, David Horowitz, author of Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. Fred, it's interesting. I got a text from Ray Pritchard. We text back and forth some when we have a guest on. And he said, pretty good knowledge of theology. He's talking about Pelagius and Augustine. Mm-hmm. Plus, he's agnostic. He's not a Christian.
Right.
He comes from a Jewish background, mm-hmm. But he's, in terms of religion, he's agnostic. But he supports the Christian underpinnings of our republic, understands that that is the foundational belief system and worldview of our republic, and understands the danger if you overthrow that, understands the danger to people like him who aren't even believers.
Well, what he is a realist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He believes history.
Right.
Which, as he pointed out, I think a couple of times, we're not teaching our kids history today.
Right.
You know, I was watching.
On purpose. He's suggesting it's on purpose.
Oh,
right.
It's a plot. There's no question about it. Right at the end there, he was mentioning about America's support for Israel.
Yeah.
I saw Pastor Robert Jeffers, First Baptist Dallas. He was interviewed last weekend with regards to, you know, the latest controversy, and I'm not sure it was the Golan Heights issue or whatever. But Robert Jeffers made this point. You know, we talk about Israel, the West Bank, et cetera, et cetera. He says, here's the problem. We don't know our basic history. The Jews were in that land 4,000 years before there were any Muslims.
Right.
That's history. Yes, it's in the Bible, but just because it's in the Bible doesn't mean it isn't accurate.
Right.
It is history. They were there for 4,000 years. What people don't know, it wasn't called the land of Palestine then.
Right.
It wasn't called that until a Roman emperor who was so ticked that the Jews were able to survive Roman tyranny, he came back and he gave it the name Philistina.
Yeah.
And that got translated through various languages to Palestine.
Right.
So, folks, the first Palestinians were not Muslims. They were Jews. There was a Palestinian symphony in World War II. It was all Jews.
Right.
So those are the facts. So when you hear, and the term that's used, that Israel is occupying.
Right.
It's not occupying.
Yeah, that ignores history.
That ignores history. If you're going to go according to the left wing's definition of occupying, then the United States is occupying Louisiana.
Well, and a lot of them do. A lot of them do. Yeah. A lot of them on the left will say, Ray, I mean, this goes on all the time, that we took land from Mexico, and listen, I'm not going to argue. We have fought a war with Mexico, probably for the sole reason of taking the Southwest. I understand that. You know, that's what young, strong,
right.
vibrant nations do.
Right.
That's human nature. Whether it's the Germanic peoples overthrowing the decadent Romans, but the Mexican people are the result of the Spanish taking that land and intermarrying with the Indians who were there.
Right. Yes.
So, I mean, how far back do you want to go before you start saying who the rightful owners are?
And also, in more recent history, you know, they use the term occupy. In the wars that Israel has faced since reconstituting as a nation in 1948, there have been three major wars. All three of those wars were started by the Muslims. But God saw fit that Israel would win them.
Right.
You know, including this, what, 67 war?
67,
war,
73,
and 73.
And 40, 48 when and, they were as soon as the United Nations.
And, and Israel is actually very generous to the Palestinians.
Overly generous.
Not only in allowing them citizenship, some of them, but also allowing them to have certain territories within Israel.
Yeah.
Certain sovereign territories within Israel where they get to kind of do their own thing.
Like Gaza.
Yeah, like Gaza. And I'm thinking, you know, if I'm the greedy Israel, then you're not having a territory within our state.
Mm-hmm.
But Israel allows them to do that because they're trying to work hand in hand. But the hatred overwhelms that.
It's amazing.
Well, Ray, I think it's clear. And David Horowitz, he wasn't exaggerating when he says that he was raised by communists. I mean, he was a part of the radical communist left in this country back, I think, in the 60s. I think he goes back that far. David Horowitz, he was, if you're just tuning in, the guest we just had on, we were discussing his book, Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. I just find it fascinating when you have someone who was so up close with the communist movement, he is saying the Democratic Party is being taken over by communists. We're not just talking about political liberals. We're talking about people who hate God, who hate the founding principles, who want, in the words of former President Barack Obama, to fundamentally change America and, in essence, so warp it that it doesn't really exist anymore. This is not hyperbole.
It's remarkable to hear a man like David Horowitz come on American Family Radio and, from his perspective, make the same kind of argument that we've been making since the very beginning.
Right.
I mean, Jewish background, raised by communists. Plus, guys, he was throwing down comparing Pelagian theology to Augustinian theology.
Yes.
I've been doing this radio with AFR for 12 years now, and we've never had that discussion on the air, and it didn't come from us. It came from David Horowitz. So, by the way, that was good theology he was laying down too, just saying that that America is a Christian nation because it depends on that understanding, that, Fred, I think you said, the realistic understanding of human nature, which Augustine had, that we are truly fallen by nature, which is why we need government, we need laws, we need borders, we need walls, because otherwise we will destroy each other. So God bless David Horowitz for a lot of things, for what he said, but throwing down some good theology in the middle of it.
All right, Fred, we got a few minutes left. We got any other news stories we can kind of fit in here?
Yeah. Yesterday, the United States joined most of the rest of the world in grounding the Boeing 737 MAX 8. And this is in the wake of this Ethiopian airliner crash last weekend. And several months before that, a Lion Air, Indonesian airline, crash of the same type of airplane. Now, it's an ongoing investigation in both cases. But yesterday we got news that satellite images of those two crashes, in other words, you're able to track the airplanes in the seconds before they crashed. And both the Lion Air one in October and the Ethiopian 737 last weekend showed the same pattern shortly after takeoff. It was going up and down like a porpoise. Okay,
yeah.
I'm on radio, but it was going up and down. In other words, the airplane was pitching itself forward on takeoff, and
forward and down.
Yes. So I think what we're coming to, and some U.S. pilots are now starting to say, yeah, they've had to wrestle with this problem with this particular airplane. We're not talking about all 737s, folks.
Right.
We're talking about the 737 MAX 8. And so what they want to look into now, what it sounds like, we're just speculating at this point, is that there is a technical ingredient that they has put in the computer there, which perhaps acts to prevent an airplane from stalling. An airplane stalls when it's pointed upwards. It doesn't have enough power to keep it going up, and the nose goes down. And so maybe there's a piece of software that's gone radical, we'll call it, and it's forcing that nose to point downwards at very critical times, i.e. shortly after takeoff.
Right.
So they got to work all of this out. There was a report yesterday that Boeing was making some modifications in the software. But we're just going to have to wait and see on this. But it's created a bit of chaos in the American system. Yesterday, Canada grounded all its 737s, but it closed its airspace to the 737 MAX 8 as well.
Wow.
And then the United States, the FAA, joined that. So a lot of flights were canceled because of that. Now the airlines are able to come in with other airplanes.
Right.
And so that will likely settle down. But it's going to be really interesting to see, as we move forward with the investigation on this, just what happened. And I'm sure Boeing is working hard to correct the problem.
Any idea how many planes in the U.S. were grounded in terms of this MAX 8, do we have any numbers?
Well, Southwest flies them. American flies them.
I think I read upwards of 40. Yeah.
Okay, so because these are brand new planes
new.
Here
yeah.
in the last.
But Boeing has 5,000 orders for this particular airplane. It's extremely popular.
Yeah, they better get it figured out.
Yes, sir.
So, all right, folks, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news. And when we come back, we'll have more of today's issues. You're listening to the American Family Radio Network. Again, 5-minute break for news. We'll be back. Please join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.